to me. WSRadio.com.
Accomplishment Coaching is proud to present the following fine programming. Accomplishment Coaching, where coaches lead and leaders coach. AccomplishmentCoaching.com.
Welcome to The Coaching Show with your host, Master Certified Coach Christopher McCollum.
Thank you, Dick Warren. I know it seemed like I sort of wasn't interested in coming to the radio right there, didn't it? But I am. I'm here, and that voice, the dulcet tones of Clarice Connolly. Clarice, what's your middle name?
Murray.
Clarice M. Connolly. She's a coach in her own private practice. Where can people find out about you? What do you do? What are you doing here?
I am a women's empowerment coach. So I work with women to who feel frustrated with life, who feel as if they're broken, or, you know, really just wandering around without a purpose. So I really work with women to, you know, find what it is that lights them up inside again and break some cycles of codependency and really just get back to loving their life.
Okay. It sounds like sad people.
Sounds like anybody that's up to things in the world that wants something more out of life.
Okay. All right. Good. I know that we did some work on our previous show about your 30-second speech. So great job. How can people find you, though?
You can find me on the website heartandandsoul.coach.
And you're starting your own podcast right here on WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in internet talk. What's the name of the show? What's it about?
The name of the show is Empowering Women, and it's going to be just talking about the things that most people don't talk about in regard to, like, self-esteem, loving yourself, having, like, beliefs and what those are, feminine wisdom, and things like that.
Nice.
Just elaborating on those.
And when does that start?
It's going to start Friday.
This Friday. Very exciting. And people can find you where?
Empoweringwomen.coach.
Great. So heartandsoul.coach or empoweringwomen.coach. That's Clarice Connolly. She's our in-studio guest co-host this week. My name is Christopher McAuliffe. I'm a master certified coach and have been for 22 years. So what we want to tell you is that we've got a couple of show notes in terms of our long-term sponsors and partnerships, and then we're going to have an entire show today on the topic of coaching ethics, which couldn't be a more important topic, and I'm so delighted to every year have, you know, one of our first shows of the year be about coaching ethics, be educational, be useful, be practical, and we're delighted to have Dr. Michael J. Marks with us. But first, a couple of notes for you. Listen, here's the deal. If you're looking for the world's finest coach training program, if you're looking for excellence in training, if you like the top of the line, if you, like me, enjoy the quality things in life. By the way, have I told you about my vacation?
Seychelles.
I'm going to the Seychelles. It's a bucket list item. Did I tell you how I'm getting there?
Aeroplane.
Correct. But not just any airplane. Emirates business class, baby. That's right. On the big double-decker plane. Uh-huh. I'll tell you all about it when I get back, if you're lucky. But if you're like me and you enjoy that level of quality, that level of excellence, and the lifestyle that goes with it, please check out Accomplishment Coaching at AccomplishmentCoaching.com, home of the world's finest coach training program. Of course, they're ICF accredited, but also more than double the hours and the in-person coaching and the reading and the field trips and massages and everything else over any other coach training program. You want to check them out, accomplishmentcoaching.com, but you can also check them out. Nobody else does this. Nobody else. You can also actually go to the coach training program and watch it happen live and just be an observer, be a guest, be a sort of a invited person to sit there and watch it. Nobody else does that. And I love that they do that. And I want you to go, because even if you don't attend their program or do that training, I want you to know what's happening in coach training at the highest level. So check it out, accomplishmentcoaching.com. Here are the cities you can find them in. Seattle, Washington, San Diego, California, Chicago, Illinois, New York City, Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and soon, not yet, but soon, Victoria, British Columbia in Canada.
Whoop-whoop.
thanks for the whoop-whoop. All right, You want to talk about the ICF and how important they are to us and how we love our media partnership?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a media partnership with the International Coach Federation. So the International Coach Federation offers an opportunity to the folks that it's associated with to really just elicit instant credibility for its members. It's the leading global organization dedicated to advancing the coach profession. So it sets this really high standard, and it provides independent certification, and it builds a worldwide network of trained coaching professionals. So it is also known as the ICF, and the ICF is the world's largest organization of professionally trained coaches.
Mm-hmm.
So it's committed to connecting professional coaches with the tools and resources they need to excel in their careers. And so to learn more about the ICF and stay up to date on the latest news, visit coachfederation.org. And on Twitter, they are at ICFHQ.
At ICFHQ.
Yeah. And so every month we actually have an ICF representative. And today we're super excited to have that person on air.
That's right. Once a month. An entire show devoted to ICF from different perspectives. We've had the people in charge of the ICF. We've had the people talking about membership. We've had the people talking about research. And there's a huge treasure trove there. So go to coachfederation.org and check it all out. Because even if you're not a member, it's great. And if you are a member, it's even better.
Mm-hmm.
Nice job. All right. Let's talk about our guest today. Dr. Michael Marks, he's an education doctor. And God bless anybody who's working in education today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever you believe in. And he's the founder of Blazing New Trails Coaching, which you can find at blazingnewtrailscoaching.com. And there is a picture of where he lives, right, when you start there. He lives 8,000 feet up in the mountains of Colorado with his wife and a dozen sled dogs. That's kind of your dream come true, isn't it?
Little dogs.
And in addition to that, he's a professional certified coach, a professional Christian coach credential, as well as a certified professional life coach. But why we're delighted to have him here today, in addition to all of those credentials, is he serves as the leader of the International Coach Federation, that's the ICF, Ethics Community of Practice. Now, let's get right to it. First of all, welcome to our microphone, Dr. Marks. Oops, I can barely hear
you.
There we go. We've got some audio issues. Will you say hello again so everybody can hear you?
Yes, greetings. Thank you for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here.
Thanks for being had, as we like to say. Let's talk about the ICF Ethics Community of Practice. What is that and how does it function?
The ICF Community of Practice is about 150 people on our mailing list, and we get together. We used to get together once a month, and now we get together once a quarter for a big presentation, and then monthly for, you know, kind of small gatherings. We just talk about ethics. Those big presentations are, you know, well prepared, and they get people a CCEU in ethics, which is a core competency, of course, and that makes it very popular. And then the smaller offline meetings, you know, we just kind of dig into the weeds on some ethical topics, giving people some perspective on how they might, you know, adjust their business so that they can be more ethical, you know, have better coaching behavior.
Now, is this something that's open to everybody, any coach, any ICF member, or is it like you have to have a secret badge to get into that meeting?
That's a good question here. No, the community of practice for ethics we have deliberately made open to the public because we feel this is a message that everybody needs to hear. Everybody needs to be able to talk to somebody about, you know, hey, what's the right way to do it? So we make it available to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's great. How do we find out about it? How do I know how to attend? Because that was something that I would love to attend.
Right. Well, you can write to me directly. I'll talk to anybody about ethics anytime. Just, you know, my favorite thing. But, you know, the website you just mentioned, coachfederation.org, mm-hmm. Go to the members tab, click that. And, you know, about five down is the communities of practice. And there you can get information about that and sign up for getting notifications on the next mm-hmm. event.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's amazing. So actually, not only this community of practice, but any community of practice that you're interested in, just go ahead and click on it and find out more.
Right. There's 10 of them, and each of us are now doing four, like I call them, big presentations a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you attended all of them, you'd get 40 CCEUs. And if you're an ICF member, that's at no cost.
Oh, nice. What do you feel is going on in coaching ethics now?
Yeah, what are some of the issues you're looking at, or what are you dealing with?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is we're shifting from, you know, looking at ethics as a punitive structure, as a list of do's and don'ts, to a list of, you know, shoulds and coulds, and looking how we can actually just behave on a regular basis in such a way that there never is a complaint. Mm. And, you know, I have to tell you, we didn't have any complaints in 2016. I'm really happy about that.
Yay.
Nothing came to the IRB, which is the Independent Review Board, the Complaint Review Committee. Nothing came to us. Well, in January 2017, we got three. So, you know, we're off and running. It's not like the world went to sleep. But there's definitely been a shift in what we've seen in the awareness among coaches on how to just do it right and just, you know, avoid getting in trouble for doing it wrong. That's kind of the biggest shift that we've experienced in the last 2 years.
I'm all about doing it right.
You really are. You really are. Let's talk about the IRB. I was privileged to serve on the IRB for 8 years, and it was in none of those years did we have zero complaints. So I had some experience. Will you let people know how it works, what it's there for, and how they can access it if anybody ever has felt like they need it?
Right. Yeah. The IRB, the Independent Review Board, and like I said, it's independent of the, you know, structure of ICF. The leaders of ICF cannot influence a decision made by the IRB. And worst case scenario, absolute, you know, and this very, very seldom ever happens, a member's credential or membership is reviewed.
I'm so sorry. That music is going to go away now. I think we can wait.
I just thought it was a nice undertone, you know, kind of
exactly. We were going to hum while you talked, but we thought it was too no, I apologize. We used to have breaks through in the podcast, and now we do not. So I want to apologize for that. Sometimes the old routines in the computer and the, you know, ghosts in the machine show up. So will you take a step back, since we've rudely interrupted you here, and tell us again. So the IRB how we find it and how we use it.
Independent Review Board. And, you know, if a member were to be put into question as to one of their practices, you know, the ICF would look at it and first say, well, is it really a ethics case, or is it just, you know, a business case? And a lot of times what comes in is just, you know, a poor business practice, and we might have to tell the person, you know, this is not exactly an ethics case. But when we do get to the point where we're saying, you know, this does kind of dance on our code of ethics, it might be something that needs to be reviewed, then it goes to the independent review process. And then it goes to the chair, who will decide to move it forward or not to move it forward. Then another person assigns a research team, a review team, to go over the facts. The coach in question, or, you know, the credential holder member, is given a liaison, somebody that's kind of stand beside them, that is privy to the information of the case but not to the process of the case. So the liaison doesn't know what's going on, but is there to kind of, you know, give the coach some moral support and explanation of the process as it moves forward. And then the coach can always call the liaison saying, hey, this is going on and I'm confused and I need some help. And that's what we're there for. So there's two things parallel in that initial phase. And then when it's the so-called review is done, the information is gathered, then it goes over to a final review committee. And they make a decision as to what to do with it. And when I say decision, you go and think, okay, you know, this is the verdict. Well, that's really not the point. Like I said, worst case, pull a credential or the membership. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, it's a development of a learning process. You know, it's a kind of, well, this is why you missed it. This is how you missed it. So what can we do to fix that in the future so that it never happens again? Mm-hmm. And we get people going through our process saying, wow, if I had realized that this was such a learning experience and be so enriching for me, I would have messed up years earlier.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. What do you feel like are some of the most common ethical issues that, you know, get addressed?
Well, hands down, it's a contract issue. The coach did not spell out in the contract. And, oh, my goodness, didn't have a written contract. Can you believe that? Well, it happens all the time. Mm. And I have to also interject, you know, culturally, internationally, some cultures don't really like written contracts. So, you know, we are talking about a verbal way of doing things here, but that's not North America or Central Europe. And when they don't have a contract in those countries, then it kind of becomes sticky because there's no basis to work on. It's just, you know, sometimes he said, she said. And, you know, that's the first thing we looked at. And usually there's just not a element in the contract that should have been there, or there's one in there that shouldn't have been there. And, you know, that's where the complainant is saying, you know, hey, I feel that this is not the ethical way to do things. Mm. That's hands down the biggest one. And then the second biggest one is conflict of interest, dual roles. You know, the coach is playing two roles. They're the soccer coach and the personal coach, you know, of the same person. And that comes into an area of conflict. And then, you know, the third one actually is physical boundaries, you know, people feeling that their personal space in one way or the other, even online, has been violated. So those are the three things we look at the most.
We're just setting some boundaries right here in the studio for those of you watching the video feed. All right. I have, man, I want to get into that dual role thing because that is my pet peeve. That is the thing I am here to stamp out in our profession. But first, I want to go back a step and talk about basic ethics. I even want to call it ethical intelligence, like basic ethics education. Because one of the things that I did as part of my participation in the IRB for a number of years was I read a book, which is very exciting in my house. But this book, it was a big book. It was an expensive book. But it turned my little head around about my little rat-like mind was blown because the book is Ethical Maturity in the Helping Professions. I want to remind our listeners, big book, expensive book. But Ethical Maturity in the Helping Professions, which is subtitled Making Difficult Life and Work Decisions, actually made me realize how important what you just said is, that our job in the ethical world is education and bringing people to making better decisions rather than punishing the criminals. And I was really interested in punishing criminals when I started with ethics. Has there been such a turnaround, some sort of turnaround like that for you, or a book or a piece of training or education that was valuable for you, Doctor?
Well, yeah. The book Ethical Maturity in the Helping Professionals is Michael Carroll and Elizabeth Shaw. I've, you know, got it right here in front of me since you mentioned
it.
That's
so awesome.
Right next to my desk. A wonderful book. And Michael Carroll has even done some seminars for us in ICF, you know, in Washington. I think they did one a couple of months ago even. And that's definitely a good one here. There aren't a lot of books on ethics. Ethics in the Real World by Howard and Cover, not to mention Patrick Williams and Sharon Anderson's book on ethics and code. And I've talked to Patrick a couple of times recently. He's writing some new stuff, which is coming out, but it's not on the market yet, and it'll be a chapter in another book. So look for that here. I also wrote one myself because, you know, I had a particular niche market, Christian coaches, that were asking a lot of questions from a biblical perspective, so I compiled that together, and that came out in August.
Hallelujah. Nice. What's the name of your book? We got to know.
Yeah, it's Ethics and Risk Management for Christian Coaches.
Nice. Does it also apply to like Buddhist, Muslim, or Hindu coaches, or
Well, that's the interesting thing is I've had several people from other faiths and even atheistic backgrounds look at the book and they say, this is great. You know, I just think this is universal. It does, you know, quote the Bible where the Bible is being addressed, but that doesn't seem to bother the people that have reviewed it so far. I think it's, getting a pretty wide appeal.
This brings me to my one of my favorite recent comments by a comedian. The comedian Jim Jeffries was talking about, look, I'm for any religion. You know, if you're Hindu, if you're Buddhist, if you're atheist, great, good for you. But these agnostics, people, pick a side. I can't stand the pick a team. I also want to point, as I'm doing my little academic stint here, I heard you say there are not great books in ethics, and of course we could agree that, like, you know, Aristotle's ethics is probably pretty useful, and I want to point in particular to Kantian ethics. You know, one of the things that students of philosophy like me know is that, you know, he sort of had this notion of doing the right thing no matter what. So if, right, you know, you're in 1930s or 40s Russia and you're hiding a Jewish family in your house and the Gestapo comes and says, are you hiding Jews? You have to both tell the truth and protect the Jews, right? Yes, I am, and you may not come in, right? Where have you found yourself at an ethical sort of crossroads like that, where there seems to be no win, or have you?
Well, you know, that's always an interesting question, is doing things right because it's the right thing to do. You know, the Kantian, what did he call it? The empirical directive?
Nice. Yes.
I think so.
I can't come up with it, but I know what you mean. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, you're just going to do it right because it is right. Well, you know, that doesn't always, you know, cut it. And recently I was offered a coaching contract that was nice. I mean, it was just big and expensive and was wrong. It's like, you know, they're actually wanting a consultant, and I'm also a consultant, but not in that area. And I could have taken it, but I was just like, this is hard, you know. This is a lot of money. And
temptation.
I could probably bluff my way through it.
Uh-huh.
But as soon as I thought that idea, bluff my way through, like, oh, okay, that's it. You know, you said that word. I've got the awareness. Bluff is not the word I want to be using as a foundational element with this, you know, corporation, really. So I turned it down.
Nice job.
Of course, you know, the other thing to do is always recommend someone else. And who do you recommend? Mm-hmm. And I always follow the advice of an ethics friend of mine, Terry Belf. She says, I only recommend people that I know, that I've experienced, that I've been in their seminar, or I've, you know, listened to something that they've done. I've you know, felt their vibes personally one way or the other, you know, either in person or on the line somewhere in the web. But, you know, I know the person,
yeah,
and I can say, this is who you should maybe talk to. And it's always, you know, speaking of recommendations from an ethical perspective, it's always a good thing to give the client choice. So recommend three. You know, one makes it sound like you have a vested interest, which you might have. You might be getting a referral fee, and if that's the case, you should expose that. Two, maybe the same thing, but, you know, three or more kind of makes it a level playing field, and therefore it's a fair deal. That's kind of what we always kind of come back to, is, you know, make it available to the client to decide, and not just make it so that the client thinks, well, the coach is a smart person, I should do what they say, and they recommended this one or that one, and I'll just take one of those. They should really actually get educated in how to make the choice so that they can pull out the best vendor, any vendor, really, not just a coaching vendor, but any vendor in any case.
Yeah, beautiful. That's a great reminder, and really good for everybody. Should write that down right now. I do want to go back to dual roles, though. This is something, you know, and it's not, I was, in my time in the IRB, I was privileged to work on a number of cases, and some of them were so egregious, right? Some were just horrific, you know, like, well, my coach took me out to drinks and challenged me to a, you know, how many shots we could drink contest. People, that is not coaching. Do not do that. That is not a professional relationship. But I know that also, you know, coaches, especially as a personal service profession, we're often in a mixer situation or in some sort of social situation with people who could be our clients.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, you know, I know that coaches do sometimes have other endeavors, right? You know, like, oh, this person would be perfect in my multi-level marketing thing, or this person would be great as my assistant, or this person, you know, is really good at their job, which is making websites, and I need a website. So where can you help us draw the lines in, like, where's a dual relationship that is sort of kind of okay, and where are ones that are absolutely not okay?
Well, you know, not okay is relatively straightforward because you're taking advantage of the situation here. There's a forceness to the relationship. You got to do this because we're doing that too. My uncle makes this vitamin in his garage, and I think that's the best thing for you right now.
Right, exactly.
Okay, maybe even to recommend your uncle's vitamin, but you should offer three.
That's right.
Get the client to learn how to make a choice.
There's my uncle. There's one a day, and there's whatever else you can find. Right.
Yeah. But what goes beyond that? Like I said, you're the soccer coach, and you want to be also the life coach or business coach for the same person, or you're coaching that person's son, and when there's that type of relationship, it should be worked out in advance. I have students of mine that come to me for mentor coaching, for example, and I say, well, the one thing that we won't do in the mentor coaching is talk about anything from the course you're taking from. So if you have an issue about that course, you can address that to me, but that, of course, will not be on the coaching time. You're not going to be paying me to talk about your problem with me. We're going to do that offline, or better yet, go through the school and their administration and work out the problem with them, because this has nothing to do with our coaching relationship. And, I've had situations where we just basically say, let's just go to the soccer example here. Okay, we'll talk about anything but soccer. We're just not going to bring that into the conversation. Being real clear about that in advance is usually the fix, but things happen and, lines can be still crossed. And I think it is really the coach's and really every professional's job to become a student of their clients and really learn and know where the client is and what their sensitivities are, and make sure that as you progress in your relationship, because the deeper it gets, the better the coaching, right? The more trust is involved. So, really getting into the client's persona, what they like and what they don't like and what their boundaries are, I think is the safest way to ensure that you're not going to cross that line.
Okay.
Got it. That makes sense. What do you feel are some liability risks that coaches should be aware of?
There aren't many. And, I've asked this question in public forums all over the world. I give a lot of online presentations on ethics, and I haven't heard of any in North America where a coach has actually been taken to court for a coaching issue. For a business issue, of course, but for a coaching issue, I haven't heard any. So I'm just kind of throwing that out there. If one of your listeners has one, bring it on, because I haven't heard of that yet. So
that's promising.
What I'm addressing is the liability is really, really, really low as far as, our litigious society, here, at least in the United States. Where you can get sued for everything, not yet for coaching, but they will come.
I'm suing Clarice right now. She doesn't know. But let me interrupt you to ask you a ethical sort of solution or pathway for something that I've actually dealt with in life. Are you open to that?
Sure.
This is online consulting, people. I'm getting free consulting right now from an expert in the field. All right. So as a coach, I worked with this client, and I worked with them for years. This woman knocked it out of the park. Projects and goals were made and hit, and it was extraordinary, right? And it was testimonials and, oh my goodness, and kept renewing, kept saying, yes, let's work together forever. Clear? And we worked together for many years and had lots of, I work inside of a framework where there's a goal and there's a time frame and there are projects and, we know if we're making headway, and she did. And then after some number of years, she came and said, okay, I'd like to, according to the terms of the contract, I'd like to end our relationship, no problem, supporting her and what's next, what support structures, right, moving forward like a professional might. And then after the end of the relationship, I want to say a month or so after that, I got a communication from her, really mean, just like, you know, our coaching, was good at the beginning, but then the last, and I think she said something like the last year or two was really terrible. And, you know, I don't know why you would be that way with me and like that. Now, I want to be clear that in every session, I ask my clients, like, what have you, you know, what's the ground taken in this session, right? So that they've actually said for themselves there was either value or not, or, you know, here's what I've taken on or anything like that. So I highly doubt that the last year or two was crappy, including that she had a contract that was terminable at any time, right? So I see it quite differently. I understand she's my customer, and she clearly has sort of an after-the-fact complaint. Now, it's not exactly liability, like I'm not expecting a subpoena, but I do want to address it somehow. Now, I'm not suggesting every coach has this, but in the event a coach has this, how would you have us navigate something like that? And I'll tell you later what I did, but I'm interested in your view.
Right. You know, the two things come to mind. My very first mentor coach in Germany, we would go through the coaching session and we would finish and, you know, we would have our next appointment. The coaching would be done. You know, it would be over. And then he would say to me, Michael, how is the coaching going? And he was asking about our relationship with his job. How do I feel he's doing as a coach? And, you know, I don't know too many coaches that do that. I've incorporated that a lot with my clients in recent years. And, you know, at least it gives me the feeling that the client is saying, yeah, it's going great. Or, you know, you used to be a little bit more edgy and now you're becoming very nice. Or you used to be very nice and now you're becoming a little edgy. And so there's a correction in their tone. And, you know, that helps me a lot just move forward. And then the other thing, of course, is to have a feedback structure. I think, you know, Peter Drucker would emphasize that we all know that feedback is the key to growing, and putting some type of set structure in there, quarterly or half yearly or at least yearly, where you're touching base with your clients and saying, you know, how's it going? How are you rating here? What would you like to see better?
Right.
And then, of course, the other thing is to, you know, make sure that the client is aware that you are a professional and you are accountable to someone, you know, like to the ICF or to a group. You know, often coaches will belong to a smaller group, like to a regional chapter or some type of accountability group where, you know, the person can also touch base with. It's like, if you're not able to communicate with me, communicate with them and have them communicate with me. But let's, you know, make sure that the relationship is intact. Everything that you do in the coaching relationship should build trust. And the higher the trust, the easier it is to communicate. And obviously, the rest of the coaching conversation, especially awareness and especially direct communication, are essentially based on high trust.
Very good. Anything for you, Clarice? Anything else
about
that one?
High trust?
No, about that one, about that issue.
No, I'm totally good. I was more thinking along the lines of, like, you know, what does it mean to, or how does a coach actually, like, coach ethically? Like, what do you think some of the guidelines are for that?
Oh, okay. Can I just butt in and tell you what I did so that people aren't wondering?
Oh, yeah.
Let's hear the end of the story.
Very much so.
Clarice is like,
so
she's like, I have moved on.
Pick your brain.
So I treated it just like a customer service issue. You know, I went, I got back to her and I apologized. I didn't want to confront or rile or concern her by reaching out personally. You know what I mean? I wanted her to have a one-way communication that she could take her time to respond. So I sent her an apology, a letter that was an apology first, and said, listen, you know, this is my profession. I want all of my customers to be satisfied. And while I believed that you were at the time satisfied, it's clear to me that now, you know, for some, something's come up that's not, and I'm happy to work with you at any time to work through that, to have a conversation, to, you know, you let me know what's going to make you happy. Do you need a refund? Do you need, you know, something else? Please let me know. And my intention, of course, was, and I said so, was I don't want anybody in the world to be walking around, you know, where if I ran into him in the supermarket, it would be awkward for us, right? So mm-hmm. I want her to be complete and happy and satisfied and fulfilled out of our relationship. And sadly, I did not hear back from her because it would have been great to be able to, you know, put a loop in. But I also didn't want to, like, be the guy who's like, I'm sorry, I'm still sorry, I'm still, I'm really, really, really sorry, right? So I didn't want to badger her either. Any recommendations there or any comments there, Michael?
Well, just one, you offered a refund. That is great. And I think a lot of coaches, especially new coaches, are like, I can't afford to offer a refund. Right. You know, I need the money. And, you know, that's often where the ethical dilemma comes in, is when you really need the money, then you might make choices that you wouldn't make if you didn't need the money. So, you know, you really need to look at it all from the perspective of what would I do if there were no money involved? What would be the moral right thing to do? Now, according to everyone I've talked to, when a refund is offered, the chances of the client actually taking it and asking for their money back after you've offered it, the other way around, they demand it. You know, then they want it. You know, then it becomes like a civil case. But you offer it. I don't know many cases, really. I'd have to think really hard to think if I know one where they've the client said, yeah, okay, you know, give me some money back. So that was really good. So I think there's a low risk there. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Thanks. And I want to be clear to our listeners today that there is no refund being offered for your listening today. It's free, and
time
you're not getting
gone.
Your money back. That's right. All right. You wanted to talk about coach, about sort of what is coaching ethically?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I mean, we're going to talk about ethics. I feel like I've gotten all the do's or the don'ts and just kind of like...
From me, right?
Yeah, exactly. All right. So now I'm not doing that or hope to ever do that. But in, you know, in regard to like ethics, just such a broad, like, what is mm-hmm. ethics really and how do I actually apply it? Like, what would you say are some of the steps or things that coaches can do to make sure they're coaching ethically?
Nice.
Yeah, the biggest word is respect. I think it all comes down to respect. And when you keep that in mind, and like I said, are sensitive to the nuanced differences of the client mm-hmm. and of the client's area where they work, you know, it's being respectful. You know, I had a client who was a missionary in Beijing, and he asked me not to use the M word. And I had to think several times of what that was.
You're like, let's see, M.
The M word. You know, I figured that I was missions, and I was
missions.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah, but he didn't want, you know, because we were online, he didn't want over the cyber world channels the M word to be used.
That's
and,
hilarious.
You know,
yeah.
So I learned a couple of codes and things for him. It's all about respect. And, you know, it's a genuine desire for the client to grow. I mean, you know, you might actually do something in your eagerness to help them that is taking away their right to make the decision and execute the plan themselves.
Wow.
So by speaking too much into it, you're helping them, but you're not allowing them to grow. So, you know, when I'd listen to these cases that would come to the IRB, and you know, I just kept hearing all of these, you know, case studies on ethics in coaching. And just one day I looked at these things and said, you know, if the coach would just do what's best for the client and not the coach, then it would all work out.
I love that. It's so simple, but it's actually spot on.
Mm-hmm. And we all say, oh, yeah, okay, I'll do what's best for the client. But really think about that. What is best for the client? And one thing that I'm kind of, you know, working with in my own coaching right now here is something that I've said, now I'm trying to put into practice in my coaching, is not just coaching to what the client wants. Hey, what do you want to talk about today? What would be your biggest gain? What would you like? What does the client want to what does the client need? In other words, digging down a level deeper and into not interpreting a diagnosis, but from the client's perspective on where they're at, trying to get the biggest gain for them by allowing the client to get that gain themselves. And when that's the case, one, there's very little chance of liability, and two, there's a very high chance of gain.
Nice. That's such a great and kind of easy thumb, you know, like guide for us. Let's go back a couple of steps or many steps. You said one of the biggest issues in that is, comes to the attention of the ICF, meaning the ethical review process or the IRB, is contracting. What should everybody know about contracting? If you could tell 25,000 coaches something about contracting, what would you have us know?
Well, you know, it's a basic contract. And one of the things that I'm often asked about is, you know, can I use your contract? Like, yeah, of course you can, because actually a contract by definition, and I got this from some research that I did, contract is not copyrightable because it is open source, because it's a contract. And if, you know, in jurisprudence, I guess that makes sense. But you can always take someone's contract. You know, it's like, I don't know what to write. Well, you know, find one that you like and modify it. Mm. And ICF does have a sample contract on their website. And, you know, I was reviewing that a couple of weeks ago, and I'm like, oh, that sounds a lot like my contract. And I'm thinking, okay, which one came first, mine or theirs? Probably theirs, you know. But there's a couple of elements in that that you should look at. You know, and these are basics to any contract. We're not really talking about ethics. We're talking about risk management. We're talking about, you know, good business practice here. There should be a time frame. There should be a clear statement on when it begins and how it ends and how the termination will end. And in the ICF Code of Ethics, the either party, the client or the coach, can end it at any time. That doesn't necessarily mean that the contractual obligation to pay is done, but at least the coaching relationship is done.
Yep.
That becomes a sticky wicket. You know, so time is a factor. Amount is, of course, a factor. Place is a factor. You know, I do most of my work online with video conferencing or telephone. So, you know, it's basically a time factor. It's all going to happen during the week. I actually never even mentioned that. I only do this during weekdays, Monday through Friday.
Right.
Because none of my clients in years have ever suggested doing something on the weekend. And I hear other coaches, you know, they do stuff on weekends all the time. It's like, wow, you know, how does that happen? I've never even been asked. Something in the way I communicate says it's Monday through Friday and it's before 7 o'clock. You know, work past that. That's just my parameter. It comes through. And if I need it, I would put that in that in the contract. Of course, the other major thing that we're looking for in a coaching contract is the distinction to other helping professions, you know, things that are psychology, psychiatry, counseling, you know, even
shamanistic healing. Right.
Yeah. No, really.
Yeah.
And the, you know, financial professions, you know, CPAs and financial advisors of sorts here, just saying that this is not that. And if a referral is needed, again, three, you will be given one, but we ain't going there in our coaching relationship. And, you know, then the other thing that is actually in my mind redundant to that, but makes sense to repeat anyway, is that if there is a problem like a psychosis, a diagnosis, a, you know, something that is beyond the coaching realm of just helping people moving forward, and however you're defining coaching, and maybe you want to put your definition of coaching in your contract, but if it's beyond that, and my contract says as per definition of the APA, the American Psychological Association, then we ain't going there.
Nice.
And then the other thing is, of course, the confidentiality piece that we've, you know, talked about. The information that's in the coaching session would be highly confidential. Some coaches even go into great extremes into explaining on how they will keep the client's information confidential. I just say it's confidential unless required by law.
Oh, let's talk about this for a second, because this is something that I think everybody's doing, if not wrong, at least what's a euphemism for half-assed? Wackily. So where should our client records, you know, the notes that we take, the clients, like, you know, here's the, here's what I'm up to and here's what happened in my life. Where should all that be kept?
in a place the thief cannot access.
Nice. So at least, at the bare minimum, a locked something, correct?
Well, physically
yes.
locked,
right.
Your office door is locked, you know, your client notes are in a safe. Do you have client notes? Are they consistent? You know, how do you keep them there? If you're keeping them electronically, mm-hmm. are they kept in a place the thief, a.k.a. hacker,
right.
cannot mm. access? Well, you say a hacker can access anything. Well, that's maybe true, but it shouldn't be a walk-in, you know.
Right.
It shouldn't be there.
Client notes here. Private client notes right here, yeah.
Yeah, I tell my students to, you know, and this is what I do. I code my client names in my calendar.
Ooh.
And in my cell phone, I only have their first name. It's, you know, Frank S. I don't put their last name because my cell phone's stolen. I don't want, you know, they can call my brother or my sister, but they can't call my client.
Nice. I like that. Yeah, I've been coding my clients by their initials. Maybe I should use a different system.
Whatever works, but don't
no,
want
nobody
the
laughed.
Thief to have easy access, you know, like,
right, right.
oh, yeah, you know, Crystal McAuliffe, I'll just call him.
Yeah.
I know him.
Why not? Well, that's very, very useful, right? Because you didn't think about that, did you?
No, I mean, I have mine hidden. It's not out in plain view, but I take handwritten notes, so they're very much so packed in a
Me
binder.
Too. Also better for doodling. Yeah.
Did right.
You
wanna,
so
all
was,
of my jokes are going the same way this morning. Okay, I got it.
Oh, my gosh. I'm very curious. I didn't actually know that you were allowed to copy contracts or take bits and pieces. I thought those were also under the category of intellectual property. So I'm kind of like, well, since we're on the intellectual property piece, or me personally, I'm over here just thinking, what can you actually borrow with or without permission?
Well, there's open source material, and what's it called? Common law documents? Common something? I don't remember it at the moment.
I'll Google it while you're talking. Yeah, we'll figure it out. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, things that just have, you know, become either too old or too general to belong to anybody anymore. And, you know, those things are, of course, acceptable here. You know, when you hear something and you internalize it and then you bring it back out of your own body, then that's usually okay. But if you're looking at a source and then, you know, saying, okay, I'll just now put it in my own words, you're probably dancing to the wrong music. So, you know, be careful there. But, you know, yesterday I wrote something and I thought, that sounds so familiar. So I Googled it.
Mm-hmm.
I put the whole sentence in Google and said, who said this? Because just really sounded really right to me and really very familiar. I couldn't find anybody.
Nice. And you said,
so
okay,
I
that's
put
mine.
It in the publication and said, well, okay, you know, I did my research on it. I couldn't find anybody. If somebody comes back and says, hey, I own that, I'm like, hey, you know, I actually did research that sentence and I didn't find you in Google, so I'm sorry. I'll cease and desist, you know?
I like that, though. That's very like short and simple. Like, if you can write back your interpretation, it's obviously not identical to whatever it is that you learned initially, that's kind of the say of, like, it has your own twist to it and it has your own flavor, and it's not exactly cut and paste, like plagiarizing what you're actually looking at and taking that information from it. Thanks.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just... Is the idea original?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you
source or give credit, huh?
Yeah. And people say, well, that's just going to show people that other people are smarter than me. I don't think so. I think, you know, when you're giving good sources, it shows that you're professional. It mm-hmm. shows that you're conscientious. It shows that you read a lot. You know, it shows that you kind of know what you're talking about and you take your profession seriously.
Thanks.
Sorry, I'm distracted only because I'm trying to look at this. Up about the title for that sort of works that are is it Creative Commons? I can't really find it. I'll stop being distracted about it. But any other tips or tools to use about intellectual property? Like, when can you use stuff? You know, if you keep the copyright and attribution, for example, can you use it, or can you only use it with actual permission? Are there clear guidelines?
No, there are no clear guidelines.
Okay.
I wish there were. You know, There is the school of thought that just says better to ask forgiveness than to ask permission. I don't think that's the ethical
that doesn't
approach
sound ethical at all.
You should take. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Finding where it comes from. And honestly, I was talking to a business owner. Was just thinking in my mind how to describe that, so I didn't reveal too much.
I think it's Frank S. What do you think? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I use Frank for all of my examples. And I was telling him, I said, hey, you're saying some things about the ICF that I don't think are really true. And his response to me was, well, this is what people have told me. And, if it's wrong, what am I supposed to do about it? I kind of come from a school of thought that says if you're going to put it in your marketing, you should check it out as valid. And he says, well, that you can't do that. I'm like, well,
you kind of can. with that little device you carry around in your pocket, right?
Mm-hmm. And, I was initially thinking about doing business with this organization, but, that kind of went south real fast.
Not so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, moving on.
Yeah, although, and I hate to get political, but...
Oh, goodness.
In a day and age where our leadership at the highest level in this country can say, well, I hear that this is happening, it's really sort of bending us all towards the culture of hearsay mm-hmm. versus the culture of doing the research, even when it's just looking something up on Google. By the way, speaking of looking up stuff on Google, under U.S. law, this is in the United States because that's U.S. law, works published before January 1st, 1923 are in the public domain. Things between 1923 and 1977 will generally enter the public domain 95 years after their publication
wow.
date, and works after 1977 become public domain 70 years after their creator's death. Since I'm not going to die, none of this is going to apply to me, but to you all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Moving on.
Good for you.
I got lost on the numbers.
Did
you? Sounds like a lot of time.
I'm
yep.
just finding out how you did in school. All right.
Math is not my strong suit.
Our time is fleeting. I know that there's more we could get into, including, other ways to get into sort of ethical trouble as a coach. But I want to give you, Dr. Marks, enough time to talk sort of freely. So we've got a couple of minutes here. I'd ask you simply to think of a parting shot or a couple of parting notes you'd like to give 20 or 30,000 coaches listening about ethics generally and where we should be looking for an ethical coaching practice.
Right. The first thing that comes to my mind is you are not alone. And we do have the ethics community of practice, for exactly that reason, a place where you can come and you can say, hey, I just don't know if this is the right way to do it. And we'll talk about it. And it's always fun that we get into a room full of people that are kind of new to coaching and other people that are kind of old to coaching, if you can say that that way. But, we have very animated discussions and we talk about things. There is a lot of gray area, but gray area speaks to the right side or the wrong side and the gray area in the middle. And again, kind of where we started the conversation is you don't have to be worried about being sued or being necessarily blacklisted anywhere if your true heart is serving people. With that said, if somebody does complain about you, oh my goodness, that's going to hurt. And the accusation could be totally bogus, but the bell has rung. And you know how it goes in our society when the bell has rung, people remember the sound of the bell and not that it was a false alarm.
Nice.
And so what are you going to do when that happens? And if you don't have a circle of support around you and, your family support, of course, your moral support, that's all essential. And now we're talking about professional support, so I would encourage everyone to be in a group where they can talk openly about these type of things. The community of practice is probably too big for you to talk about your personal things, but we can certainly point you in directions where you can get a more intimate group of people that you can rub shoulders with. Accountability, that's one of our competencies, and mm-hmm. it's also one of the signs of our professionalism. And, you know, I always encourage people, if you're really worried about it, if it keeps you up at night, put it in your contract.
Beautiful. Well, that music tells us our time with Dr. Michael J. Marks has ended. You can find out more about his work by going to his website, BlazingNewTrailsCoaching.com. That's BlazingNewTrailsCoaching.com. And you can also find out about his books there and his incredible life in the Colorado Mountains. Meanwhile, check out International Coach Federation, CoachFederation.org, for all questions about ethics. Clarice, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Marks. We'll talk to you next week.
Do you want to be a professional coach? Are you in business trying to make a real difference with people you manage or work with? Have you started a coaching practice that isn't quite getting off the ground? Get the skills you need to be a successful coach today with the Coach's Training Program from Accomplishment Coaching. The Coach's Training Program will show you how to help others focus and be more fulfilled. Whether you want to improve your company's bottom line or create a thriving coaching practice, Accomplishment Coaching can give you the distinctions and practices you need to coach others effectively today. Accomplishment Coaching has spent 6 years developing a cutting-edge coaches training program that will have you ready to coach people professionally in just 12 months, and you don't have to take time off work to do it. To find out more about the Coaches Training Program, just call 1-888-548-6813. That's 1-888-548-6813.
Do you love wine, but it doesn't love you back in the morning? Then it's time to try Alkotox, the ultimate hangover cure. Alkotox is a dietary supplement that reduces the harmful side effects of alcohol, and it benefits all alcohol consumers, not just those who occasionally overindulge. So now, for less than the cost of a drink, you can wake up hangover-free. To learn more, go to VinVillage.com and let Alkotox make hangovers a thing of the past.
I raised $8,000 to build schools for South African children.
After realizing how many people go hungry in San Diego, I now volunteer at a food pantry.
I'm spending the next year doing volunteer projects across three countries and helping in ways they designate to be the most helpful.
The World Link program at the Joan B. Kroc Institute for Peace and Justice recognizes the potential of youth as agents of social change. Learn how you can help youth become a generation of leaders in action at peace.sandiego.edu.
Hi, Scale listener. This is David Finkel, co-host with Jeff Hoffman of Scale Your Business. I wanted to let you know that our newest book, Scale, was just released and to encourage you to get your copy. The book will give you 7 proven principles to grow your business and get your life back. Scale will help you work less by getting your business to produce more. Get your copy online or at your local bookseller. For more information, visit us online at scaleyourbusinesstoolkit.com.
Hi, this is Rob Barnett, CEO and founder of VinVillage.com and the Wine and Dine Show on VinVillage Radio. Do you have a wine, event, product, or service to promote? Then contact VinVillage.com to reach thousands of wine lovers across the country. VinVillage connects like-minded wine enthusiasts with unique and exclusive wines, events, products, and services. To learn more, contact us on VinVillage.com. VinVillage is where wine lovers connect.